Hey everybody, welcome again to F This
Week. We're back.
My name is Patrick Bromley, and I'm joined tonight in a fight to the death with Mark on.
I only have binoculars, though. I'm not gonna.
You got the worst thing in your pack.
I got the worst thing.
Do you know what I got in my pack?
Did you get a spork?
Optimism.
Oh.
Yeah. So actually, your binoculars are going to kill me.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
You can find our website at fthismovie.net. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/fthismovie. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/fthismovie. And email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. You can find us in the iTunes store, where I think 95 of our most recent shows exist. But if you want to hear all of our 140-plus shows, 150-plus shows,
oh, wow.
Go to fthismovie.net, and you can find all of our old episodes. If you are listening to us in iTunes and you enjoy the show, please take 30 seconds and give us a star rating, give us a review, give some feedback. It helps raise our visibility and makes our show more popular.
Even if you don't like our show,
yeah,
you can still give us a 5-star review.
You could, yeah.
That's a possibility.
You could do one of those, like, ironic 5-star reviews. Like, you hate it, but then you're like,
right,
5 stars. Yeah, I think we went through this on the last episode, so I'm not going to,
okay.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Speaking of Twitter, though, by the way, if you're not following us on Twitter, at FThisMovie.
Yes.
You should absolutely start following us, because February 2nd, we're doing our second FThisMovie Fest, celebrating the movies of 1991.
2/2, friends, for the second all-time. I don't know. I botch this every time I mention it.
It was a lot of fun last year. This year, we're doing it again. Last Boy Scout, The Rocketeer, Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey, New Jack City, and Terminator 2, Judgment Day. Pretty kick-ass lineup of movies. We're all going to watch them together and talk about them over Twitter.
Come be a part of history. It's the only... I've done some research.
Yeah?
I think we're the... There's no other thing.
It was the only one I could find.
We're the only Twitter movie festival.
Yeah, it was the only one I could find. So we've been billing ourselves as such. Yeah, but it's only fair. A matter of time before somebody...
It's okay.
...steals from us.
Come be a part of history.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's do it, yeah.
Why would you not want to be a part of history?
Yeah, like, I if love
you could,
history.
Why would you not shoot JFK if you had the chance? I guess is what I'm saying. Because you could be a part of... I'm just saying, be a part of history is what I'm saying. Yes. Make history... By assassinating the president. I'm not calling for the assassination of the president. I'm just saying if it were me and it was JFK and I could shoot, I'm just saying...
Part of history.
I want to be a part of history.
That's a key difference.
Absolutely. Yeah. So join us for F This Movie Fest on February 2nd. Mark, I didn't even say what movie we're talking about, but it doesn't matter. People figured it out from the name of the podcast.
Right.
It's Battle Royal or Battle Royale
it's not Battle Royale with cheese.
Something in Japanese.
It's not Battlefield Earth. It's not Battleship.
For sure, one of these days we're going to get around to doing Battlefield Earth. Like, it's going to happen.
I'm going to be out of town that weekend.
I'm positive I've told this story on the podcast before, but...
Too bad.
In 1997, Doug and I went to see Starship Troopers together because the trailer was the worst thing ever. We're like, that's not a movie, that's a joke. So we went, sort of ironically.
I don't understand what the draw is then. You're like, ha ha, I'll show you.
It looked like the craziest, worst movie based on the title. I had never read the book. I'm like, Starship Troopers? Those are words, but that doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
So we went, and like 15, 20 minutes into it, we're like, this is the best thing I've ever seen. We loved it so much. And so then we were constantly chasing that high. And so Battlefield Earth comes out, and we're like, maybe it's going to be Starship Troopers. I know it looks horrible. Maybe it's going to be Starship Troopers again. And not even...
You got
4 minutes in, we turned to one another. Yeah, we turned to each other. We're like, oh, this is bad news. We were there like first day, first showing, like 10 a.m. Oh, that was...
That's a horrible lesson.
It was rough. That was rough.
Because what that means is that you are directly... you're directly lining yourself up to get demolished. Because it's like, well, let's hope this thing that looks terrible is going to be great.
Secretly good, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That's not a good, risk.
I've done it for so many things.
You just learn lessons.
I don't. Can I tell you something?
Yeah.
Hansel and Gretel Witch Hunters?
No, don't do it.
I'm totally going to see because I'm convinced. I'm convinced. Yes, it looks like the worst thing ever. But there's this outside chance that it's this other thing.
Famke Janssen's in it.
Yeah. And
Jeremy Renner.
Girl that you can't stand.
I hate her.
Rightfully so.
Strawberry Fields?
What is her name? I can't think of her name.
It's not even
Gemma Arterton?
That's... sounds British enough.
Strawberry Fields, though, yeah, is what I was going to call
so,
it.
It's that voice.
Yeah.
It's the voice.
And the
she
fact
can
that
say
her...
the most tender, wonderful things. Like, yes. Yes, diabetes patient. Yes, quadriplegic midget. I will help you across the street. But her voice is so grating that I wouldn't
And she doesn't
it.
Change her facial expression. No. I don't think ever. I've seen her in four or five movies, and it's just been the one face.
Like a duck.
Kind of like a duck's face. Like a British duck. So we're going to talk about Battle Royale, Battle Royal, Battlefield Earth in 1 second. But Mark Ahn, have you seen anything good lately?
I have seen some good things lately. All right. We were talking about, I just saw Zero Dark Thirty this past weekend. Which
That's crazy. You just saw it? Because I saw it like weeks ago.
Yeah.
Literally like over a month ago.
Look, big movie critic guy. you can take your balls off the table. Thank you. Stop it.
That's where they need to be rested.
Oh, boy.
That's my ball table.
Enough room. Oh, it's the creaking of the. Sorry, guys. Just a second. Okay. Zero Dark Thirty, which I really liked.
Yeah.
I was telling you before a little bit. I think there'll be some comparisons to Argo because of the similar subject matter and the espionage and the foreign service, that kind of stuff. And you kind of, once you get into the movie, you sort of know where it's headed. But then, despite all of those things, like, you are still in the grip of the tension and the suspense, which is such a credit to the movie makers and
who are not nominated for Oscars.
They weren't. But we're married to James Cameron.
Yes.
So really enjoyed Zero Dark Thirty. Would, you know, highly recommend it to anybody. I know there's been some conversation about some of the subject matter, which is not so much the subject matter of the movie, but just really more the subject matter of the actual news and the things that happened, which, you know what, I think I choose to see that as something that's beneficial to the conversation around the movie, because if people are talking about,
I don't...
Sorry, go ahead.
I mean, we probably shouldn't get too deep into it, but I agree with what you're saying, but I don't feel like anybody else is extrapolating that far. Like, I really think they're limiting it to just the movie instead of saying, like, we're just debating whether or not torture is good in this movie as opposed to, let's debate whether or not torture was good in this country.
Yes.
And I don't feel like the people that are causing a stink are extrapolating as far as you just did. But continue on.
Sorry. I think also with the torture issue, it's just that I think people are just focusing on just that, and I feel like focusing the conversation on just the torture part makes it seem like, oh, well, there's going to be nonstop torture in this movie, and that is not the case.
No,
just in case people are worried about, they're a little iffy about it. So anyway, I would highly recommend. Obviously, I can't guarantee whether you'll like it or not, but I think it's definitely worth watching. It's really well made. Jessica Chastain does a great job.
Yeah.
All those things. So I saw that.
Good.
Did
you see anything else maybe like way more horrible this past weekend?
I did, but I thought we were talking about things that were good.
Oh, all right. Yeah. Good point. All
we
right.
could talk about Gangster Squad if you want to.
We should, but if you had another good
one.
We'll
leave it to you. Yeah. Let's see. I saw, I forgot one. 2 weeks ago, maybe 3 weeks ago, I saw Jack Reacher.
Okay.
It was another situation where I looked at the trailer and was like, oh, come on, really? It's Tom Cruise being Tom Cruise, all this stuff. Watch Jack Reacher. Great. It's a great time.
Yeah.
It's so fun.
Every week on this podcast, I feel like it's another person being like, Jack Reacher, what a pleasant surprise.
Yeah. And I think maybe that's just our own fault because of our expectations of Tom Cruise and whatever. Tom Cruise outside of a Mission Impossible movie. There are certain expectations. But I think what really works, and since we mentioned Gangster Squad, like, Jack Reacher, like, knows, like, what it's trying. It's got a certain tone and sticks with it.
Yeah.
And doesn't really deviate, and you can say whether that works or not, or whether it's believable and all this other stuff, but it stuck with it, and I had a great time. Super, super, super fun. And go ahead.
I wonder if I knew exactly what Jack Reacher was going in, would I like it as much as I did? Because I feel like a lot of my reaction was, hey, this isn't at all what I thought, and I actually really like what this is. It felt like a movie from, like, 1997, and I mean that in the best way.
Yeah.
Like, they don't make movies like Jack Reacher very much anymore. No.
Like a medium-sized action movie.
And more of just kind of like a procedural and definitely. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, and it had like a little sense of humor.
Yeah.
And it looks like all grim. Sort of. I remember the first trailer that I watched. I thought
it's just Tom Cruise fighting guys.
This is silly. He's wearing a leather jacket and driving a car. Right. It's stupid. But then I remember the following trailer showed a little bit more, and I thought, oh, well, this could actually be kind of cool. There's an investigation. Oh, well, right. Now I'm in.
And that's what so much of the movie is the investigation, which is actually really interesting, I thought. I liked all the investigation stuff.
Yeah.
I was less interested in the... And it made me not hate Rosamund Pike,
yes.
Who previously I sort of grouped in with Gemma Arterton as just, like, mannequins that bore me. But I thought she was okay in this.
Yeah, she was fine. I think Jack Reacher's still in theaters, right, for sure?
Probably not for too much longer.
But no, it's a good time.
It is, yeah.
If you're looking for something that's not, like, Oscar fair,
right.
That's official. But then, yeah, it's a good time.
For sure. Yeah, definitely.
So I think there's some other things further back, but I think you guys already talked about it on previous podcasts. So
yeah.
I'll just cut it off.
Do you want to talk about, we can talk about Gangster
Squad. Let's talk about Gangster Squad. Well, you go first, since I just talked a lot.
I did not like Gangster Squad.
No? No. Well, why not?
Because I thought it was a very bad movie.
What was bad about it?
Oh, name it. With the exception of the cast, and it's not even that the cast did a great job, although I wouldn't say anybody with the exception of Sean Penn was bad. Everybody else was fine.
Right.
But they weren't able to save the movie, because I thought the writing was kind of bad. I thought the direction was actually atrocious. And Ruben Fleischer, it's kind of sad because he seems to be getting worse with every movie. He made Zombieland. It's like, that was fun. That movie was okay. What it was.
Yeah.
And then he made 30 Minutes or Less,
okay.
Which wasn't very good. And it was like,
the worst.
Right. Ever, maybe he just stumbled. And then I saw the trailers for Gangster Squad and I was like, great. Hey, this looks good. Maybe this is what he should be, this sort of stylized thing.
Yeah.
Is what he should be doing. And, I guess he shouldn't be.
Shouldn't be doing this.
There's just so many things working against the movie, and maybe it was taken out of his hands and recut by the studio. Honestly, I don't know. There seems to be some things missing from the movie.
It seems really shallow.
Yeah.
All the way around.
Yeah.
For no reason.
At one point, Erica turned to me and said, "This reminds me of Mobsters." And I said, "Mobsters was a better movie than Gangster Squad." Yeah. Mobsters, by the way, came out in 1991, the year being celebrated by F This Movie Fest. #F This Movie Fest, February 2nd.
Right. Plug. I don't know how much I want to talk about it. Just it's still out, and I know people still want to see it or whatever. I will say that in the trailer, I don't think this is giving away anything, but in the trailer they have a... You know, because it's a stylish sort of thing or whatever, so they started playing some... Because it's a period piece or whatever, they play music from that era, but then they also play, you know, some modern hip-hop song to go along with the trailer, and it sort of works because it's gangsters, because, of course, hip-hop is gangster music. Doesn't everyone know? Right. Duh. You see what they did there? That's what they did there. I will say in one of the trailers that we saw before Gangster Squad was there's a movie by Jackie Robinson. I think it's just called 42.
It is called 42.
It's called 42. And it's, you know, that's fine. It's a good story. Like, he's a pioneer. Everybody knows Jackie Robinson as a historical figure, as a person. But then, because, I don't know, is it because he's African-American? They have to include, again, the modern hip-hop music
to a
period piece.
Yeah, I wonder if they're just worried that, like, modern audiences won't be interested in something that takes place in the past.
Right.
So they put rap over it, and then it's like, see, it's not your parents' history, pussy.
I don't understand.
It
doesn't fit.
That movie looks like garbage.
He's wearing clothes from the 40s. It doesn't, or 50, I don't know the exact era, 40s, you know, there. It doesn't make sense to play hip-hop over it.
Yeah.
You might as well, you're not going to play Daft Punk over that either. Like, I'm just to be equally
the score
rare,
to,
like,
Tron Legacy.
Right.
I would see that movie,
right,
actually.
Right. Babe Ruth with the Tron, with Daft Punk. It doesn't make any sense, people.
No.
Stop doing it. So, we're saying Gangster Squad, maybe enter at your own risk.
Well, Gangster Squad in reviews keeps getting mentioned in the same sentence as The Untouchables, because there's a lot of similar things sort of plot-wise, and L.A. Confidential, because there's a lot of similar things sort of period-wise. And obviously, it's nowhere near as good as either of those two movies,
which
I'm okay with. I don't need it to be The Untouchables or L.A. Confidential. For a little while, I thought, hey, this seems like a movie made by 12-year-olds with cameras who only know about life by watching other gangster movies.
Sure.
Like, that's entirely what the movie seems informed by. And for a little while, I was going to be okay with that. Like,
right.
Oh, this is just like, I got home from seeing, because the movie that popped into my head is a movie that nobody saw, but of course I saw it in a theater.
Right.
And it's called Texas Rangers. And it was a Western starring James Vanderbeek and Ashton Kutcher.
Oh,
and
man.
That gangster squad is to gangster movies as Texas Rangers is to Westerns. It's okay. Like a bunch of kids trying to approximate this thing that they've seen.
That's a deep cut, man.
It is, but I was thinking about Texas Rangers while watching Gangster Squad. I got home, Texas Rangers was on TV. I stand by my comparison.
What?
It's a meaningless comparison, because for it to have worked, people needed to have seen Texas Rangers.
And there's a reason why people didn't see
it. I think I was alone. I think Erica and I saw it opening night because we wanted to go to a movie. I think we were alone in the theater on the night that it opened.
Oh.
But I believe it also opened in January, because that's where movies go to die.
Then we had Haywire last year.
Yeah,
so I was
right.
So hopeful.
January, we had The Gray last January.
Oh, I thought, okay.
We had Man on a Ledge, which I'm the only one willing to go to bat for.
It's okay.
It is what
you
it is.
You keep doing it. You gotta love what you love.
I also saw a movie from 1980, which is actually from like 1974, called Shogun Assassin.
I haven't seen those.
It's basically just the... And people's heads are going to explode right now, because I have not seen Lone Wolf and Cub, which is what Shogun Assassin actually is. It's like some American producers recut Lone Wolf and Cub and made it, like, worse, sort of, and added, like, more contemporary music and got rid of, like, some story and just kept the violence and released it as Shogun Assassin.
Sure.
I have not seen Lone Wolf and Cub, so people that are, like, purists are going to be like, oh, my God, you saw the bad one and not the good one.
Sorry, purists.
I don't care, because I was very entertained by Shogun Assassin.
Okay.
It's, crazy violent, crazy, like when you see Kill Bill when they like chop limbs off and the fountain of blood sprays out, that's where that's from. It's from Shogun Assassin.
Okay. I don't know anything about this movie. Is it sort of, because in Kill Bill that's sort of like played for laughs, sort of like, dude, check it out, it is a fountain of flipping blood.
Yeah.
So is there any sort of like, you know?
No, I don't think it's as played for laughs.
It's like, no, this guy's gonna die.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, it's not like super serious, but part of the laugh in the Kill Bill movies is you're laughing not just at how ridiculous it is, but also because it's referencing this older thing.
Got you.
And the Shogun Assassin doesn't have that advantage, obviously.
Got it.
But they are actually watching Shogun Assassin at the end of Kill Bill Volume 2.
Oh. I didn't realize.
I won't give away the spoiler of how that scene comes up, in case you haven't seen Kill Bill. But, yeah, there's a scene where the characters watch the movie. The last movie I'll talk about very briefly is on Netflix Instant, and it's a movie called My Sucky Teen Romance. And it was written and directed by a girl named Emily Hagens, who, when she was maybe 12, I should have looked this up before we started recording, made a zombie movie called, I think, Pathogen.
Okay.
And she wrote and directed this movie. She lives down in Austin, Texas.
I feel like I've heard...
Well, because they made a documentary about her called Zombie Girl, the movie. Now, I've never seen Pathogen, but I've seen Zombie Girl, the movie.
Sure.
And it's great. Everybody should see it. I think that's also on Netflix. And she's since made, I think, two more movies, and My Sucky Teen Romance is her most recent. She's got to be 18 now, I think. I don't know for sure. You know, it's a hard thing to criticize, because on most objective levels, it's not a very good movie. But then you remind yourself that, like, oh, it was made by a kid.
Right.
And then you kind of cut it some slack. And it's about kids at a fantasy sci-fi convention where there are some vampires. And it's definitely, like, sort of goofing on the whole Twilight phenomenon.
Right.
So I appreciate that like she has something to say about that, since she's theoretically the demographic who should be all into Twilight, and instead she's sort of mocking it in her own movie. And it tries to actually say some other things about growing up and having to take responsibility, because the characters are all about to go to college. So there's some sophistication to it, honestly, maybe in the writing more so than in any of the technique or the performances.
Sure.
I can't necessarily recommend it unless you are somebody who saw Zombie Girl, the movie, and you want to see, hey, what's that girl up to?
Got it.
Check it out, especially.
What was the name of it again?
My Sucky Teen Romance.
Sucky Teen Romance.
Yeah.
That reminds me, I want to mention just one more thing.
Yeah.
Also on Netflix, there just came out, there's a documentary on James Bond. It's called Everything or Nothing.
Okay.
which takes you through, and I'm oblivious to the quality of this documentary because I love James Bond so much. So I was like, oh, there's James Bond stuff. Like, I just want to talk about it. And it kind of takes you through, Everything or Nothing is it's EON, which is Eon Studios.
Yes.
It's a production company that made the Bonds. And so it kind of takes you all the way back through Ian Fleming and, like, the novels, and it's a little bit about his life and how he got inspired, and then it takes you through the producers and how they kind of, like, came up with Bond and sold it, and some behind-the-scenes stuff with, like, Connery and sort of, like, the studio machinations and all that sort of stuff. And they have a lot of, like, live interviews of the people, and they're all still around. I don't think Connery has, there's clips of Connery, but he didn't show up, but all the other Bonds show up for the thing. They're all in the documentary, including Daniel Craig, so it's pretty cool. So I know there's a lot of James Bond fans. I know a lot of people like the Skyfall podcast, and so
yeah,
Everything or Nothing is on Netflix, and that's sort of, if you like Bond, it's definitely worth watching.
Yeah, I want to check it out.
Yeah.
I had to take a break from James Bond because, like Scary Movie Month, I overdosed on James Bond.
Because, well, when Skyfall was coming out, overdose on.
Yeah, right when Skyfall was coming out, I watched way too much James Bond, and then I was like, I need to break.
Like, yeah, did you do the thing where, like, all the Bond movies just started streaming into one another? And
kind of, yeah.
I've done that.
Yeah.
It's not a good feeling.
No.
You get dizzy.
All right, let's talk about Battle Royale. Or Battle Royale. I honestly don't know. There's an E at the end of it, so I know it's Battle Royale.
It sounds French.
Technically, but I think the movie is just called Battle Royale.
Let's call it a French thing, because it's a Japanese movie.
All right.
That makes perfect sense to me.
anyway, it's from the year 2000, and it's directed by, I apologize if I mess this up, Kinji Fukasaku.
Sure.
It is available on Netflix Instant if you are someone who has never seen it. And you have a decent threshold for violence, I would say definitely check it out, and then you can come back and listen to this podcast. Or you can listen anyway. But I think it's really worth seeing, as much as you might think it's not. Because it's basically about a group of Japanese school children who are forced to murder one another.
Sure. Do you want to lay out more of the? I don't know.
Go ahead. Yeah.
So that's okay. And this, it's sort of. I feel like it's set in the near future.
Right. It's never quite specified, but it suggests that,
like,
crime has gone
out
of control.
Close enough to the current time.
There's nothing futuristic about it, except for the solution to the problem that the country is facing.
Correct.
Yeah.
So apparently, like,
this and all the hoverboards. I'm sorry. Everyone is on a hoverboard.
Yes, and there's time travel. And this is where you leave the Looper's guns. So this is set in the near future. It's a Japanese movie, by the way.
Oh, yeah, right.
Subtitled. So don't get mad at me because you got to read.
Now, let me ask you this, though.
Sure.
You are Korean.
I am. Spoiler, everybody.
Spoilers.
Not just Asian.
Now, I know they
Korean.
Were speaking Japanese. Could you still understand what they were saying?
Not at all.
Oh, I'm sorry.
We're not the same.
This has been Ignorance Corner.
Is that a new column?
That's my new segment.
Ignorance Corner.
Ignorance Corner. Where Patrick can't tell the difference.
Next week, Mark will ask a lady if she's pregnant. Oh, boy. And then Mark will be in jail. Because of the beatdown that ensues. Not, the pregnant woman will beat me up. Okay.
Oh, wow. Okay, but so, you go to jail?
No,
she beats you up and you go to jail?
I'm not going
to
go to jail.
Oh.
Never. I'm never going to jail. You'll never catch
me. You'll never catch me.
You'll never catch me alive. Because in Battle Royale, what happened, it's in the near future, and society has degraded to the point where they feel like children are out of control, and they're misbehaving, and terrible things are happening. And so the government takes control of the situation, and they pass a law. It's called the BR Act. BR for Battle Royale. Royal, I don't know. Battle Royale Act. I know.
It's like everyone pronouncing Les Miserables on the Golden Globes. It's like
Les Miserables.
Everybody has to say it a different way.
Right. I'll show you how cultured I am by pronouncing it the Battle Royale. But you're German. Okay, so there's this law called the Battle Royale Act. And so what they do is they randomly select, in some sort of lottery form, a class of kids, so like an entire ninth grade class,
right,
which is not super huge. It's about, in the movie, it's a class of 42 kids. They all are in the same grade, and they are just shipped off to an island
They get on a bus for like a field trip.
Right. It's like, just kidding. It's a school trip. And then they wake up out, and it's right. like, whatever.
Right.
And then, so they're sent to this island. So they're away from everybody. And they have 3 days to kill each other.
Yeah.
And until there is one left standing. If there is more than one left standing at the end, then everybody dies because they put collars on all the kids. And so it's like, it's forcing them to.
They're exploding collars.
Yeah. They got to turn on each other.
Running Man style.
Or else, like, nothing else is going to happen.
Right.
So that's. That's basically, I don't know if I've, I don't know if you can cover it.
No, and that's, and all the, by the way, all that setup is like maybe the first 12 minutes of the movie, and then the rest of the movie is kids killing each other.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I think seems a little off-putting to people. keep in mind the movie came out in 2000 before kids killing each other was as prevalent as it is now.
Yeah.
So if you're able to sort of divorce yourself from so much of what has happened in the last 10 years, you'll have an easier time watching the movie. But it's interesting because the movie is definitely like the premise is so shocking and the way that the movie is sort of stylized is so over the top in the amount of violence.
Yeah.
That you think that it's just sort of this exploitation trash, and it's definitely set up that way, and you could sit down and watch it and think that's all it is, but there's way more going on in the movie than just that, and I so admire the way that it disguises all these messages in the most repellent subject matter you can imagine. Just a movie about kids killing each other. Right. Which, by the way, another movie came out earlier this year about kids killing each other and made, I don't know, $1 billion.
Yes.
So it's a little bit hypocritical for everyone to turn up their noses at Battle Royale, which at least embraces exactly what it is.
Right.
And then for everyone to go see The Hunger Games and make it one of the biggest movies of the year. I will say, however, and I won't spend too much time talking about The Hunger Games, because when it was announced, even when people were talking about the book, I was like, well, that's just Battle Royale. Like, what? Are you guys aware of this other thing from 2000 from Japan?
Right.
Because what you're talking about is Battle Royale. Having seen The Hunger Games, having read, I think, all three of The Hunger Games books, the comparison isn't as fair, because I do feel like The Hunger Games is way more about the society in which this is a thing.
Yeah.
The reasons why it's gotten to a point where they create this these Hunger Games where kids have to kill each other. It's way more about sort of the bigger picture.
Like government.
And yeah. And like the reasons why. People. Exactly. Right. And Battle Royale is way more about the actual ramifications of 43 kids having to kill each other.
Yes. Agree. Which is why I think, I don't feel like we need, maybe we should say this. I feel like we don't need to, but like maybe we need to. I don't, and I'm pretty sure Patrick doesn't, as the father of two children. We're not, like, condoning that the death of children is, like, great, and we love watching it on cinema or whatever.
No.
So that's not...
Well, wait, now back up. I can't even... I was going to make... the worst joke. I was going to say, like, okay, but only if they're... If they get really sick first.
Only if it means it'll save the town.
Yeah, just like a slow illness. Yeah, sure, I'm fine with that. But yeah, not murder. So, oh, no, that's wrong.
Of course not.
Anyway, sorry.
So no. So it's not. I think part of this movie is where Hunger Games didn't go was that Hunger Games, because it wanted to keep its PG-13 rating, but also just in the, I think it's a little bit consistent with the books as well, because the Hunger Games books, I think, are geared toward a younger audience than Battle Royale. We'll talk about audience for Battle Royale later. But Hunger Games, you know, it's geared toward this, like, I feel like 11 to 18 kind of market. And so I think they...
Also, it makes sense that I read all three books in my mid-30s.
Right. Well, you know, just you can't go back in time or forward in time. And so I think they sort of sensibly dampen down the effect of the violence without, like, losing, you know, without losing the narrative effect of it. And it's still trying to make the point that it is. I think Battle Royale, on the other hand, forget my name. that it's trying to, the director, and I read this, the director was actually making a very firm statement that he actually, and I don't think I agree with this at all, that he wanted, it got, in Japan when the movie came out, it got like a, no, nobody under 15 should watch this, is what the ratings board
came out with. That's fascinating too, by 15 being the cutoff.
Like, yeah, I mean, I don't know, maybe they just, you know, that's just as arbitrary as 13, I guess, I don't know.
I guess, yeah.
Who knows?
Or 17, sure, I guess, for rated R, right. But...
And so, but the director would actively go around and tell, I don't know if he, like, would tell kids on the street or something, but, like, in interviews and stuff, he would say, like, no, I want kids 15 and under to watch this, which I thought was like, whoa.
Yeah, that's weird.
That's kind of rough, man. Because yeah. I would say that the themes and, like, the ideas that they talk about in this movie are absolutely worth talking about. I mean, kind of referring back to that torture conversation with Zero
right.
Dark Thirty.
Right.
But to say that a 15-year-old is ready to... I don't know if I could go to the place where I think that a 15-year-old is, like, going to see this movie and understand the social ramifications that the director is trying to, yeah, like, point out. You know?
It's hard to say, because I feel like on one hand... no, absolutely not. All they will take from it is kids killing kids and right. lots of blood.
Like, and that's okay.
But on the other hand, and maybe this applies more to like young kids than it does to like a 15-year-old.
Sure.
You know how sometimes young kids, like when they see something, they can like cut right through everything.
Sure.
And understand like a very specific meaning that mm-hmm. even adults can't, because they have too many frames of reference, and they're picking up on too many other things, but, like, right. a little kid can just zero in on something.
Right.
I mean, I think by 15, that's probably been beaten out of people, but...
right.
But maybe, because they are you know, they are the age that the kids in the movie are, maybe they're able to... It's sort of the process of just identification, where it's like, sure. what if this were me? Or there's certain beats in the movie that they can sort of recognize as being familiar, whether it's like a first kiss or a crush or like
sure.
a conversation between two friends that might hit them closer to home at mm-hmm. that age than it does to me. I definitely feel like it's way too young for them to understand anything than
right.
the kill, violence. Kill, kill. Yeah, right. yeah. Right. But I want to go back real quick to Hunger Games. Because I do feel like, honestly, and I don't mean to... I said I wasn't going to keep comparing it to Hunger Games.
Yeah.
To some extent, I feel like Hunger Games, maybe to keep its PG-13 rating, and maybe because, like I said, it's actually concerned sort of with something else. But Hunger Games cops out a little bit. Like, Hunger Games softens the violence so much. And I'm not suggesting it needed to be harder or bloodier, but it almost... You lose sight of what... the movie's actually about, with the exception of maybe like one scene that's really played to be like a tearjerker scene.
Right.
You sort of lose sight of the fact that it's about kids killing kids.
Yes.
And Battle Royale does not
You're right.
do that.
It reverses it. Yeah.
I mean, it goes so far in the other direction that it's like,
you might lose the other thing.
You kind of have to choke on like, this is what it is. And yeah. it's consistently awful. I mean, anybody who thinks that the movie is glorifying violence against kids, I think, is really missing.
Right.
They're literally just describing what's on screen. I think they're really missing
yes.
what the movie is about.
I think anybody who loves this movie only for the violence, and if they make comments like, oh, yeah, that's that cool movie where all the kids kill each other, like, Eesh. That person doesn't understand
No.
the movie.
Well, that's the person who sees Zero Dark Thirty. It's like, that's an awesome movie where torture works.
Right. Oh, geez, yeah. like, it's so much more than that. I think part of... And I think what determines it... And I understand, because I think this is... When I rewatched it last night, it was the second time I watched it. The first time I watched the movie, I did definitely have that visceral reaction of... Oh,
yeah.
boy, that's just right out in the open. Because, you know, like, so earlier Patrick mentioned that the exposition only, the narrative, just like the setup or whatever, takes like the first 10 to 12 minutes. And then they just go right into it.
Yeah.
There's no, like, you don't get to stretch, like, warm up and stretch. Like, it just goes immediately into blood and...
And there's not a lot of scenes of, like, hey, we have to find this person or, like, a lot of... Like, it's just scene after scene.
Right.
Of
just...
Punctuated
killing,
by a death or
knives,
several deaths, yeah.
Just shooting,
yeah.
all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And, so my first viewing of it, I just felt unsettled.
Yeah.
I said, oh boy, why is this such a, you know, what's, why is this taking place? Why does this have such a, why is this even stuck around aside from just the violence? On the second viewing, I think I could, and like you've always said about second viewings, that you see the movie for what it is the first time you see it for what you want it to be. Words to live by. that.
Also, don't do dope.
Yeah. Also, don't ask ladies if they're pregnant.
Did this happen for real?
No.
Oh, okay, you keep coming back.
But
to
it's
it.
Like Idiot's Corner. Like just, I feel like
what Ignorance Corner. Like, Ignorance please, Corner. I'm get sorry. My segment
is
correct.
Is Idiot's Corner somebody else's podcast?
It could be.
Shoot. Okay. Where now I've like completely lost.
We're the second about, time you saw it.
Second time I saw it. Okay. I realized that there's two perspectives, and by perspectives I don't mean like character perspectives, but the two viewpoints are like it's this adult, right? It's this adult world, this adult perspective, and then there's the kids' perspective. All the kids in the, I think they're ninth graders, is that what they said?
That sounds right.
Something like that. High school, eighth grade, ninth grade, something like that. So the kids are like 13, 14, something like that. And it's a war between those two viewpoints of the world. And in the movie, and as it turns out in real life, if you're like on the side of the adults, right? Because
mm-hmm.
I think this is close to the heart of the movie, I think. If you're on the side of the adults, because the adults in this movie, they're the ones who created this law. They're the ones who, they're like, okay, you kids go, like the kids didn't choose this, obviously.
Right.
The side of the adults is saying, you are uncontrollable and this is how we have to deal with you. I think the people, maybe in real life and in the movie, who think that way are going to just see the violence as like, oh, that's terrible. Unnecessary, but terrible evil. But I think if you're coming from the viewpoint of the kids, these 13 to 14-year-olds, one, I mean, and this is kind of the epiphany I came to, which is like, it's really those kids are bad in the sense that, like, it's sort of a failure of the adults that these kids are bad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not to say that, you know, kids don't have any ownership over their actions. Of course they do, and they should be taught to. But the kids in this movie, they've ended up bad, sort of.
Right.
And it's this exasperated moment where, like, parents are like, this moment that adults get with children, where they're like, they're just sick of them, and they just want to go away. And like, why don't you just shut up and sit still? And this is the farthest
right.
logical extension right. of right. that impulse of just shut up and stay still. But as a kid, you're like, well, no, not that kids necessarily always have the ability to articulate this, but like, tell me what I'm doing wrong. Like right. kids don't need to just be slapped around. They need to be taught to do better.
Yeah.
And so if you're from the point of view of the kids, you realize like, oh, this is like, this is me being abandoned. Right. Literally the kids right. are abandoned on right. an island. To right. go, like, look, here you have no structure, and I will not teach you how to be a better person, and you just go eat yourself up into chaos and destruction. And it's really those two viewpoints, the viewpoints of the kids and the viewpoints of the adults that are just at war.
Yeah.
So, and I think what gets lost is that because we're so into that adult mindset of like, oh, just the violence, and it's so terrible.
Right.
But if you see it from the kids' point of view, it becomes more of a tragic story. Because it's like, right. oh, there's no, who's helping these kids? These kids obviously need help.
Right, we're being forced to do this by the adults.
Right.
Because they wouldn't take the time to come up with a better solution. Right. And so now we're being forced to be as horrible as we can. The movie is, you know, called a satire a lot of times. And I don't think it's a really satirical movie, but I think if it is satirizing anything, it's sort of what you're talking about, which yeah. is just the sort of overreaction on the part of some adults who, you know, the way less extreme reaction is the way that a lot of kids are just overly medicated now, where it's yeah. like, my kid's a problem, I'm going to put him on Ritalin or whatever, you know, and that's right. sort of become very commonplace. Mm-hmm. And this movie obviously takes that to the 10th degree, and rather right. than Ritalin, they're substituting it with mass murder. But,
yes.
This is probably like the fourth time I saw the movie.
Okay.
And the first time I saw it, because it was never officially released in the United States, and it was never Ignorance Corner. It was never officially like commercially available until maybe last year.
Yeah.
On
only through Netflix.
Yeah, on DVD or Blu-rays. And I had like this bootleg, like this Asian import Ooh. Bootleg. And so the first time I saw it, it was definitely that thing of like, what is this that I'm seeing?
Right.
What is this weird forbidden movie that we're not allowed to see in the United States?
Right.
that comes from Japan, so it already has this quality of otherness, and then it's like all these kids murdering each other in insanely bloody ways, and you're just like, this is what's going on in Japan? I don't mean kids right. are murdering each other.
Right.
I just mean, like, these are the movies they're making in Japan? Like, what right. is going... So there was... I was reacting more to, like, what... I didn't know how to feel about it. Like,
yeah.
It just was this weird forbidden thing. And then I saw it a couple more times, and I feel like every time I see it, I like it more. And again, it's a hard thing to say, like, hey, I really like this movie.
right.
But, like, yeah. I do, you know? Like, it's tough to watch, and it's supposed to be. At the same time... If you're a fan of, like, action movies and violence and stuff like that, like, it's put together in a way that's super watchable.
Yeah.
If you're divorcing yourself from...
The fact that these are children.
Right. You know what I mean? So it's not like... It doesn't just drag your face through mud. It's not like a Saw movie where yeah. it's like, well, this is as miserable as possibly can be. It's super high energy, and it's like... Yeah. It moves along really quickly. So it's just that what's happening is horrible.
Yeah.
And every time I watch it, I like it more. The first time I saw it, I remember one of my, not complaints, but one of the reservations I had was I couldn't tell anyone apart. And I don't mean because they're all Japanese.
Right.
Ignorance corner. It's just that
yeah.
they're all dressed the exact same because yes. they're in uniforms. And you spend hardly any time with any of the kids.
Yes.
A lot of times kids are introduced in the same scene that they die.
Right.
And so you don't grow attached really to any of the characters. There's one or two, maybe three characters that you sort of become invested in, especially the main character.
Yes.
Which we have to go back to actually, okay. remind me, based on what you were just saying.
Got it.
The more times I see it, the more I actually have come to sort of appreciate that approach, not just for the economy of storytelling, but because the movie, you know, not only does it add to sort of just the senselessness of what's going on, but it also, it fills you in on sort of everything you need to know about a character in a very short amount of time,
yeah.
right before, you know, he or she dies or
yeah.
commits a murder. And so sometimes it's, you know, these characters never had a chance at their first romance. And sometimes it's best friends who sort of betray each other. And sometimes it's a kid who always felt like an outcast who now all of a sudden has a purpose almost.
Yeah.
And it shows you all the different kind of reactions to a horrible situation like this that yeah. all the, you know, not to spoil anything, but at this point, you know, two characters throw themselves off a cliff rather than
right.
murder somebody else or yes. or be murdered horribly. They just mm-hmm. decide to take their lives in their own hands and right. commit suicide.
To not accept
right.
this game, that this is what they're forced to
and
do.
And so there's all these different reactions. And the movie's kind of smart about that. And what I like is that the movie never forgets the fact that they're kids. And so the way that they relate to each other and the things that they talk about, the tragedy is, you know, here's a kid who never got a first date and now yeah. is never going to, because he either right. is going to
yes.
be killed
mm-hmm.
or, you know, best case scenario, he survives and like has murdered 10 other people,
right.
if not more, you know?
Yeah.
And so no matter what, nobody is getting out of this still being a kid.
Yeah.
And the movie never kind of overlooks that. It never just turns into like this violent action movie that just happens to star young people.
Yes.
It's all in every scene. It's about them being young
right.
and doing these things that they have nobody has any business doing, but mm-hmm. especially these 14-year-olds.
And I think one of the ways that sort of tone is maintained is because the way that they like what they talk about.
Yeah.
Because it's all these, you know, they're high school kids or late junior high, something like that. And so they're just talking about what high school kids talk about,
right.
which is like,
right.
is there someone, do you like that girl?
Yeah.
And do you like, are you friends with that person? And then like all the grudges that you have in high school. And then and, you know, I read somewhere, and I agree with this, actually. I think earlier you talked about this being satirical,
yeah.
a satire. I think in some of the reading I did leading up to this, was they were talking about this movie being more of a fable, and I like the comparison of it being a fable, because you see, you know, certain kids who are the outsiders, you know, of whatever, and everybody's been to school and knows all the groups and all that stuff, and the kids who are the outsiders in this class of students, they're the ones who, you know, all of a sudden now they're empowered to take their revenge for never right. being accepted. And it's like, aha, well, now I have an automatic machine gun.
Right.
So now I'm going to take revenge. And the reason why I'm mad at you is because you slighted me. Because right. of, like, the terrible things that, you know, that we do to each other when
especially
we're
when
in
we're
high
kids.
School.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And you see all that. And so all the even though the consequences of these quarrels are, like, epically bloody and awful and terrible, like, the basis of it is still, like, these things that just high school kids fight about. Like, right. oh, you like them, and, like, you're doing this now, and I saw him hurt my friend, and so I want to go kill him now. And
right.
it's all, yeah, I mean, it's, like, this greater, and I love the fable comparison, like, it's this greater thing that just happens every day in school.
Right, that it's kind of playing out the high yeah. school experience. Only with graphic violence and horror. And, you know, where that breaks down is, I think, even in a high school setting, like, there is a group that sort of rises to the top, whether it's through bullying and dominance or just being popular and pretty or whatever.
Right.
Like, there's a group that rises to the top, and that doesn't really happen here.
No, it doesn't.
Because, you know, they can't, basically. I mean, I guess it's reducing it to that one person
right.
who's the most cutthroat is the person that rises to the top and wins yeah. at the end.
You said you wanted to talk about the main character.
Well, just that you had said that part of the movie is about the failure of adults.
Right.
And nowhere is that, I think, more clarified than in the main character, who's
yes.
shown to have a mother who died a long time ago.
Mother died, like, when he was a little kid.
Yeah, and then father sort of out of work. And then hangs himself and
yeah.
basically, like you said, abandons his son. And there's a scene there's flashbacks sort of sprinkled throughout the movie. And actually there's way more if you watch the director's cut, but we'll get to that in a second. And there's a flashback to him being out to dinner with his dad, who's mm-hmm. just a mess and trying to get a job and out of work and really seems to be crazy. And you watch this kid across the table and you realize that he has to be the parent.
Right.
And then he's literally abandoned by his father when his father kills himself, and now he's dropped on this island where he has to
right.
murder everyone. Just that I feel like that was really, if the movie is trying to talk about sort of the failure of adults to maybe do right by their children or mm-hmm. to raise their children in such a way that they don't have to then fear them.
Right.
That is best personified, I think, in that dynamic.
Yeah. I think also that main character plays that role of being the kid who, like, he's, like, the good guy.
Right.
You know, he's the protagonist for
right.
sure. And, like, in I suppose one could make the argument saying that, well, you know, within the context of the story, not in real life, within the context of the story, well, these kids are really terrible. They're really awful. And pre-going to the crazy island, there are some scenes where it's shown, like, oh, boy, these kids are something else. They're quite a handful.
But only a couple, I feel
yeah.
like. You're never really given much indication that, like, they are the worst or
right.
they are to be feared. And even when they get to the island, you feel like there's a few who thrive in this environment, especially the one transfer student who's sort of the villain of the movie.
Right.
Who this is his, this is what he lives for.
Yeah.
A lot of the other kids you feel like are just doing it because they're scared, you
yeah.
know, and so they want to survive. And so they're committing,
yeah.
but I never get the feeling once we're on the island that they don't seem like really bad kids.
Right. They just seem pretty normal.
Yeah.
I think also it plays into that, adult perspective, adult versus the kids perspective
yeah.
at the very beginning. Part of it is the economy of the movie that you were talking about, but the way that these kids are instantly characterized as bad is done in a real few short strokes.
Yeah.
And then so you're like, okay, well, yeah, these kids are bad.
Right. Well, the
you
one
know?
Girl, like, pulls the knife on the teacher.
You're like, oh my gosh,
like,
what the
right,
heck?
Right. right.
And they wrote something, a note on the board saying, we're taking the day off and not showing. And you're like,
right.
well, geez,
yeah,
these
right.
kids are awful.
Right.
But then, but the main character is, that Patrick was talking about. Shuya is his name in the movie. I think that's his nickname. That's not like his real name. I don't know. Shuya, anyway. The main character. But here's a kid who's had all these terrible things happen. Like, maybe he doesn't have the best friends or something. And, you know, his parents have died and awful, just been taken away from him in really awful ways. But he's still, like, a good, like, normal person, despite the fact that all these terrible things have happened.
Right.
And so it's this continuance of this thing of, like, look, like, even though awful things have happened to this kid, he's still good. Isn't he worth saving? Isn't he worth taking care of? Why is no one taking care of this kid?
Right.
And if he's worth taking care of, then what about all the other ones who are in his class? So it's this extension of, but like, you know, no one remembers him, no one cares about him.
But is there something to be said, though, that he's one of the few kids who, once on the island, sort of makes this moral choice not to participate in the murders? Because so many of the other kids do. And like I said, I do think a lot of them, it is out of fear. I mean, I think of that first kid who's like a little heavyset who just seems to be so afraid and is killing people because of that. And there are other people who make that choice, but I guess I don't know if the movie really wants to make the argument that like these kids are good. Would more of them not make that choice? I don't know.
Yeah.
Or is it just more interested in the examination of that sort of sociological what would happen?
Right. I think it is that. Well, our main character has got some motive. Well, I don't want to totally spoil it, but some motivation as to. Okay, we can find.
Yeah.
Spoilers.
they were told to watch it at the beginning.
The main character. Yeah, that's true. That's true. Idiot's Corner. No. What is
Ignorance Corner.
Ignorance Corner. Damn it.
Which is what we're changing the name of this podcast to, by the way.
It was going to be Dirty Rotten Bastards. Yeah. Now it's going to be Ignorance Corner. Fantastic. We're playing to our. I don't know. Our main character, his friend at the beginning of the movie, he's the kid who actually knifed the teacher. It was the boy. And then the girl picks up the knife and hides it.
Yes.
So this Shuya's friend, Nobu, is the one who like stabbed their teacher at the beginning.
Right.
And he seems like Nobu seems a little bit more unhinged and sort of crazy and wild or whatever. And he gets picked off really early in the movie. He ends up, he's one of the early goners.
He's still in the classroom, right?
He's still in the class. Yeah, he didn't even make it out.
Yeah,
and so Shuya decides, and there's a girl that Nobu liked, and since Shuya is his best friend, he decides, you know what, I'm going to do what my best friend would have done and protect this girl which is a noble choice that he decides to make because of the game. I would say for like the other kids, like the heavyset one, or like the random other faceless ones, that maybe what I think about them is just that it's. I'm gonna stick with this fable model because I think it really works. It's just that, well, like here are kids. Like he was like our main character Shuya is presented with a situation where he can make the noble choice of like, okay, well, here's my motivation. I'm gonna do the right thing because it's good. And like maybe the other kids don't have that motivation. They're just thrown into this thing and they don't know what to do.
Right.
And I think that. One could make the argument that just falls back onto, like, it's the adult's fault.
Right.
Like, here's just this ordinary kid and thrown into this extraordinary circumstance, and he doesn't know what to do.
Yeah.
You know, maybe, and I don't know, maybe this might be, what I'm about to say might be taking it too far. It's like, well, maybe if all those kids were cared for or, like, properly raised or, I don't know, given structure and taught well or whatever, maybe they would have all sensibly said, no, I'm not going to play this game. This is stupid. But, I don't know, maybe that's taking it too far. Maybe that's too much to expect out of human nature, but I'm not sure.
The fable thing is interesting because now that I think about all these individual scenes, which is sort of what the movie is, I mean, there's obviously, like, a larger narrative, but it's a lot of these little individual scenes, and they're all like these weird little microcosms of high school, like you were talking about, where you think about like the boy and the girl who are maybe going to kiss, and then she tries to kill him, and he ends up killing her, and then and it's this weird little microcosm of like being afraid of getting your heart broken, and like how much do you give of yourself to this person that you have these romantic feelings for, and what if they use that against you? And that's exactly what plays out.
Yep.
Or the scene with the girls in the lighthouse where it's like,
this caddy.
Right, except they all start out like they've made this little life for themselves where they're cooking and they're living together and everything's fine. They're not going to kill each other. And then the one thing happens and everybody turns on each other immediately.
And it's also especially the one thing that happens is like a boy shows up. Right. And that's the start of the trouble. Right. And how often, you know, obviously.
Wow, yeah. See, that's every time I watch the movie, I realize that it's smarter than I gave it credit. Not that I never thought it wasn't smart, but like I couldn't get past the hook.
Yeah, you know what I mean? I don't think I was smart enough to see past it. Like, right. It's only on the second viewing I'm like, oh,
because
oh,
I, well, it's just whole, so shocking. You know, I mean, it's like it's so much to take that to look for other layers of meaning. Like you really have to let the first thing sort of hit you and kind of sink in, like, okay, I've adjusted to this thing. Now let me look further. There's a director's cut that's also available. I think it's the theatrical cut that's on Netflix. Okay. I think. Was there any of the basketball stuff?
There wasn't.
Okay.
But I have seen the basketball stuff.
Before. Okay. The basketball stuff is from the director's cut.
Okay.
So there's a Blu-ray of the movie. And I think if you buy just the movie, just Battle Royale, you get the director's cut, I think. You have to buy the, like, Battle Royale collection to get the director's cut, the theatrical cut, and Battle Royale 2, which I'll get to in just a second.
Woohoo!
And I actually like the theatrical cut way more, because the director's cut adds a lot of CGI blood, which, A, always looks bad.
Right.
And B, the movie did not need to be bloodier. No. Like, it's not a thing where, like, hey, this would be way more effective if I could just see more arterial spray.
Right. No one got the point. Right. What could we do? Right. Well, let's punch up the blood a little bit.
And it lingers more on, like, the post-Lighthouse aftermath. Like, there's some shots of violence that it shows more in detail, which is unnecessary, but okay, whatever. It also flashes back to this basketball game a lot, and that stuff I actually liked. That's about the only thing from the director's cut that I like, because it shows all of these kids when they were still kids, like just days ago, and it shows them in their everyday high school environment, because really the only high school scenes you get of them are those scenes where they're sort of made out to be bad or scary, or high school is chaos, you know, and this is just kids enjoying a game. And every time it flashes back, you're like, oh my god, a few days ago they were just kids, you know. And so I think that's effective.
Yes.
That gets lost in the theatrical cut. And then the other thing that it adds, it's this thing called Requiems. And it's these three scenes at the end of the movie that really just feel like deleted scenes. Like, they don't really have any context. They don't belong at the end. I mean, they have context, but they just seem like scenes that were cut out of the movie. It's not like, oh, these are at the end for a very specific reason. It's almost like you put in a DVD, and the feature of the DVD is that it's going to play the movie and then all the deleted scenes in one continuous session. Huh. That's what it feels like.
Okay.
One of the Requiems, I think, is the basketball game. One elaborates a little more on the relationship between the teacher and the girl.
The girl, okay.
Which is already...
which we need to talk about.
A little bit weird and hinted at in the theatrical cut, but expounded on more in the director's cut. And I forget what the third one is. But I don't think they work at all, and they dull the impact of the movie so much for me. Because even in the theatrical cut, I'm actually not crazy about the sequences that start and end the movie.
Sure.
It opens with, like, last year's winner, basically, right?
Right.
You get to see, like, the end of last year's game, which I don't really think is necessary. I understand it wants to throw you into this, and, like, it's really a jarring way to start a movie, and you're sort of set up for what the game is. I almost feel like it would be more effective if you're just from the kid's point of view.
Right.
Where...
start on the bus.
Yeah. Or you could show them being bad in high school or whatever, but when they wake up and they're in that classroom and the rules are explained to them, if that's the first you're hearing about it, it's like, what is this? Instead, you're told what it is right up front.
Sure.
And then the last scene, again, spoilers, involves Shuya, is that what he says?
Yeah.
And the girl, like, going back to the city, and now they have to be on the run because they weren't supposed to both escape, and it's fine, but it's not my, it's not as effective an end to the movie as maybe I would like.
Yeah.
It's fine. I think it's there more to lead into the sequel.
Can we talk about the ending?
Yeah.
Or like the, and not just that ending, but just the last part of the movie.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, one thing that didn't, okay, I couldn't, there's, oh, there's a major spoiler, but
that's fine, yeah, whatever. Right.
Okay. Just so everybody knows. So if you haven't seen the movie, definitely do not freaking listen to this part, okay? Spoiler for the ending part of it. Okay. There's a part where, okay, there's our main character and then two other students. It's just the three of them left over, and then they go back to the compound that they started with the soldiers, and then they take on the teacher, who's, like, in command of the soldiers somehow. So yeah. Whatever. Their former teacher.
Which, by the way, I don't mean to interrupt, but the way that that goes down is, like, they trick the teacher into thinking that this transfer student, who's there sort of seeking revenge,
sure,
has killed the other two, and he's the winner.
Right.
And the teacher calls the game, and they say, do you want to confirm it? He's like, no, it's done. And they're listening to the whole thing. That's how they know when people are killed, because they're, like, listening to the whole... It just seems strange to me that in a society that has the technology to make exploding head collars, that
right.
they're not... They don't have video surveillance,
sure,
I guess. Right, that's right. All.
No, we didn't have time for...
You could probably confirm it visually, but no, okay.
Why don't we just go look?
Yeah,
right. Why don't you take these 100 right. guys and go find out? Right. Whatever, anyway. So it's the former teacher who was the head of... who's the head bad guy.
Yeah.
And then the three students are confronting him and whatever, and it's this showdown kind of thing. And then they end up shooting him because he wants to be shot. There's, like, this storyline of, like, he just seems to be really lonely and just hates his life and there's nothing good about it or whatever. And then so the kids end up shooting him because whatever. He pulls a gun on him, which ends up being a squirt gun. So it's like, oh, hey, he really wanted to die. Yeah. So he's taking him on. Okay, so he's dead on the floor. They've shot him full of freaking bullets, okay? And they're standing there, and they're kind of like, okay, it's over. And there's just a beat of, like, respite. And then the phone rings in the office.
His phone has been ringing throughout the movie.
Right, because, like, he's, like, I think it's his hag of a wife.
Yeah,
like,
he's constantly
having...
She's
a real shrew, you know? And so she's calling him all the time, blah, blah, whatever, saying these awful, like, things that awful wives say. And then... He's been shot. He gets up off the floor after having been shot and answers the phone as if nothing has happened. Which
is a weird, absurdist.
I don't understand that.
It's
I don't
well, that's
get
the thing.
It
it's
all.
Like because yeah, I thought the same thing. I was like, well, that's a weird moment of like absurdist comedy in a movie that hasn't had a lot of that. And yeah, I mean, the whole movie has been absurd because the premise is absurd, but like it's never played for laughs the way that that scene sort of is. And you know what it reminded me of? And I don't mean to spoil anything else, but a movie came out 2 or 3 years ago called 13 Assassins.
Yes,
Takashi Miike, and there's a character who. For sure is dead at one point. And then in the next scene, he's totally alive and fine. And it's, they never really suggest why that happens.
It's fine.
But it's just, I'm like, do the Japanese have restorative powers?
I don't understand.
Ignorance corner!
It's all the fish that they eat in their diet. And I don't get it because it's and because the beat a few minutes before is the squirt gun.
Right.
And so all of a sudden, my brain goes to, like, well, is this... Okay, so squirt gun, and then, like, he got shot, but wasn't really dead. Like, oh, is this... Like, are we now in a different world? Are we now in a different set of realities? And, like, oh, was there, like, another cabin in the woods style other layer on top of the layer thing?
But then he dies immediately after,
right? So what's the point of the beat?
It's this weird... It's a laugh where I don't think a laugh is necessarily appropriate. But
I
again,
almost don't think anyone laughs. I don't know.
Well, because I think the joke, sort of maybe misogynistic as it may be, is that he can't even die in peace. That he's wanting to die. He's ready to die. He's essentially just committed suicide.
Sure.
And yet he has to go answer the phone one last time.
Right.
And it's this weird thing where now the movie becomes about his character for another minute. And it's, I think it's sort of supposed to be a joke. I just don't necessarily think it's the right place for a joke. But whatever.
Sure.
It is
so
weird,
that was something.
It's definitely weird.
That was weird.
Yeah.
Since we're talking about the former teacher thing.
Yeah.
The former teacher and the female student.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's, man. And
it's never, and even in the longer cut, it's never... it's never necessarily a romantic thing.
Right.
But there's definitely more to their relationship. And again, I'm not suggesting, I don't mean more to it in that there's like a sexual undercurrent.
Right, right.
But there's this connection between them, whether he looks at her as a daughter or just some weird, he sees himself in her. I don't know. There's this weird connection between them. And again, I don't quite know what that adds to the movie.
No, I think it informs, this is my only theory.
Yeah.
I'm just grasping at straws, is that it's the whole, he's lonely, like he's completely isolated in his life. And so he sees this one sweet little girl in his class. And so he gloms onto her. I think the reason why I go in the direction of like, whoa, is this like some sort of forbidden, like romantic angle, is because the entire movie has been this forbidden angle of while we're doing all these other things that we shouldn't, these taboo sorts of things, kids killing each other. Like, why shouldn't, what's one more taboo on top of the taboo mountain?
Right. And it's another example of adults doing wrong by young people who are supposed to trust them and whose trust is consistently violated by the adults, you know?
Okay. Last thing I wanted to talk about, and it segues into what you want to talk about next, which is the end, like the very last part, which is Shuya and the girl who are the ones left over from the game, and then they are on the run, and then like they move, the ending of the movie is okay, let's run, we need to go, and it's like this weird. I don't want to say weird. Maybe it's not weird to somebody else, but I find it a little. Maybe I just didn't get it, and it's like this sort of philosophical like punchline at the end of the movie. So like, no matter what you're afraid of, and I'm just paraphrasing, I've forgotten it exactly verbatim, sorry, I know somebody can look this up. But it, you know, it's like, run, and you need to, and it's like spoken to the audience. It's Shuya's voiceover saying like, you need to run, and then you see them like running off to a train station, presumably to escape and whatever, all this kind of stuff. And it's like, that is a philosophical sort of like punchline. I'm like, run, what are you telling your audience to run? Like, if this audience is theoretically 15-year-old kids, what are you telling them to run from? Like, I don't understand. I don't know.
Well, and like you said, it's a weird philosophical punchline that has nothing to do with what's come before.
Yeah.
So you have this movie that seems to be saying this thing for an hour and 45 minutes, and then in its last 5 minutes, it wants to say this totally new thing that's like, what? I don't understand. Why are you introducing this new idea into your movie that already has a lot to unpack?
Right. And it's because it's also like the, I don't know. So like, it's already like, that's directed at the kids.
Right.
Right. When I think the way that I'm seeing this movie is that the problem is not with the kids necessarily, although they have problems, but the problem is the adults interacting with the kids.
Right.
Not all adults, just, and so it's like, well, you don't want to tell the adults to run. Like, that's not going to make any.
Right.
So it just kind of seemed off. But you said you wanted to talk about the sequel.
Have you seen the sequel?
I have not. No.
Okay. It's also available on Netflix. I would say you should watch it as a curiosity, but temper your expectations, because I think it's pretty bad. And that's depressing. It's upsetting. The director of the original film died of prostate cancer after shooting, I think, one day or one scene.
Oh, boy.
His son took over and finished the movie. And I'm not suggesting that, you know, it's the son's fault that the movie doesn't work. But it does kind of pick up from there, and Shuya and the girl have become terrorists, basically.
Oh.
Because, you know, they've done this thing that they're not supposed to do, and now they're trying to overthrow their it's very much Hunger Games, you know, the way that Hunger Games kind of goes. And so, okay, I'm not totally on board with that, but okay, it's interesting that they do try and tell an entire story from the point of view of what is essentially a terrorist, and he is your protagonist.
Okay.
It does reintroduce, you know, the BR, the Battle Royal. And, you know, you don't necessarily want to just see another movie where it's like, okay, now 43 more kids are going to kill each other. And so it does introduce this twist where now you're on a buddy system and you can't ditch your partner. And if your partner dies, your collar goes. So you have to keep each other alive. Right. And it's this neat kind of wrinkle. Without spoiling too much, the movie abandons that very quickly.
Oh.
It spends very little time on the actual battle royal.
Okay.
Almost to the point where it essentially plays out in the length of like a scene. And it's a crazy scene that reminded me of like the D-Day sequence in Saving Private Ryan.
Wow.
Okay. It's a weird movie. It is.
Limbs flying everywhere.
Just blood, I mean almost noise. Like that it's
right.
They arrive in these boats on a beach and a lot of people die in one sequence. And then the rest of the movie is a big mess, and it's very disappointing. Again, I appreciate the fact that they didn't just, it would have been very easy to just redo the first movie with 43 new kids and some crazy new kills, you know, right. But like that would be gratuitous. And while I know the first movie is gratuitous, but I think it's gratuitous for a purpose.
Right.
And the sequel would not have been, it would have just been cashing in on, you know, what the first movie already did. So I don't think it's very good. It's a big mess. If you are a fan of the first movie, I would say check it out just as a curiosity. It does sort of try and continue the story, but don't expect good things.
Yeah. There has been some thought. Well, we should talk about remakes or like the attempt to remake this in the States. That kind of stuff. I know there's nothing confirmed, right? Or I think people have been talking about it.
Two things. One, they were going to do a 3D release, theatrical release. And the movie, again, has never had a wide theatrical release in the United States.
Sure.
So is it a commentary on the fact that like we're so desensitized now that 12 years after it was made, now we're ready for it? I don't know. And they were going to put it in 3D. What 3D would add to this movie is beyond me.
Right.
And I guess better heads prevailed and said, well, in light of a decade's worth of school shootings, let's not do that.
Right.
So they scrapped those plans. The last thing I heard, and I believe just today this was squashed, the WB, which, is that a channel now? No.
I think it used to be.
The CW?
Sure.
It's the CW. I'm still calling it the WB because I'm living in 1999. Because
we're old.
Yeah.
James Vanderbeek was.
Yeah, exactly. Sure. Star of Texas Rangers.
of what movie?
The CW was going to turn it into a television series. and I believe just today.
How?
Well, I know what they think that show would have looked like. But again, if you're doing a drama, a weekly series, and you're doing it right, and maybe people want different things out of a TV show, if it's me watching the show, I'm watching the show not wanting characters to die. If you've done your job, and the writing is good, and the actors are good, I don't want to see them killed off every week.
Right.
I don't want to... It's different from a movie. Again, in a movie, you have 5 minutes that you spend with these characters before they're killed off.
Right.
In a weekly show, you're coming back every week for these characters. You're spending 22 hours a season with them.
Yeah.
So, ideally, you wouldn't want to see them killed off, right? But I guess every week, more of them die, and at the end of the season, one person wins? That's not...
Right.
And that's a weird... That's watching Survivor, you know?
I don't know how you could maintain the fable/satire, like the commentary part of it.
Right.
I don't think you could keep that. I don't think you could sustain that with the rhythm of television.
I don't either.
And it doesn't, I don't know.
Because every week all you're walking away with is, well, so-and-so died this week.
Right. Or it becomes like,
we're closer to one guy left.
Yeah, I know. And on, and I forget which cable network, Showtime or HBO or whatever. They had those. They had the gladiator shows were really popular.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, and so they would
stars.
Fight. Sure.
Are you talking about like Spartacus, blood and
kind
sand?
Of. Although I mean, those are very different things, right?
Okay.
But just in terms of the violence and in terms of like, it's just these people waiting to fight and die.
Right.
Like that's what that would have been, except with kids.
Right.
Bye-bye!
On that's a network that's sort of for kids, like it's for teenagers, you know.
That's not gonna.
No, and again, it's just further proof that a lot of sort of executives just do not understand.
Hey, I don't think
anything. It's like, well, Hunger Games is popular, and there's this other thing that's like Hunger Games that is from Japan, so not a lot of people know about it. So let's do that as a show instead.
You're right.
We can't get the rights to Hunger Games, so we'll just do Battle Royal. And I really think it was just today. If not, it was this week where somebody said, yeah, we're not going to do that.
Yeah, because Japanese things are cool.
Yeah, everyone's super into Japan right now.
And, but some other guy who has a literature degree would come in and say, like, hey, guys, have you heard of this thing? It's called Clockwork Orange.
Yeah, right.
We should make that into a TV show. No, it's just a bunch of teenage hoodlums beating people up every week.
So instead they went with, let's do a prequel show to Sex in the City. So that's what they're doing instead.
Is this a real thing that you just told me, or is this a joke?
Yeah, I believe it's debuting as we speak. It's called The Carrie Diaries. It's like, what would the girl from Sex and the City be like as a teenager? No, I mean, that's on the same network that was going to air the Battle Royale TV show.
Oh my gosh.
You can't have both, people. You can't have both.
I want somebody to be original. And just don't give me a prequel.
Yeah.
Give me the thing, like, not just a sequel. Like, the thing right after.
Right.
I want the thing, like, way, way after.
Yeah.
I want the Carrie Diaries when she's 85.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Give me that.
Yeah.
Because, well, that's going to suck just as much as anything else. But that's different. Like, there's a new...
I believe it's called The Golden Girls.
Oh.
Oh, and it's already...
Oh, my mistake.
It already exists.
Ignorance Corner. I'll say awful things about old people now. I don't know. No, I don't. I love old people, and I love children. I don't want either of them to die. I'm sorry, everybody.
No.
One last thing. I know we want to wrap up because we're hitting our time limit here. And I think some of the people in the discussion around this movie is about that this movie... I don't know how much I buy into this, that this movie was the beginning of, or like the start, not the very start, of the Asian cinema that's coming over here, the cinema coming out of Asia being particularly of a certain kind of tone, like very, very hard-edged, very kind of gritty, very kind of like super violent kind of stuff. I don't know if I necessarily agree with that. I mean, you and I have talked about on this podcast of, you know, other, like, I Saw the Devil and Man from Nowhere and whatever, that kind of stuff, which we really like. But I don't think that this is, like, the beginning of that, I wouldn't say. Because, I mean, there's...
I just watched Shogun Assassin. That was made in 1974.
Right.
Crazy bloody.
Right. I mean, there's, aside from, like, martial arts kung fu movies, which I think are appropriately classified as something different than this... There's all the, like, hard-boiled, like, all the John Woo movies, which were, like, just 4 or 5 years before this came out, you know?
Yeah.
I want to say. And so it's, like, I don't feel like it's the beginning of it, but I could see how people would point back to this thing and be like, whoa, there's, like, a blip. Here's a point on the map of the history, of the timeline of this thing.
Well, again, it goes back to sort of my reaction when I first saw it, which is just like, is this what they're making in Japan? Like,
freaked me out.
I knew that wasn't the case, but it's just like, boy, you would never see a movie in America about...
Kids
killing each other in the most violent ways. Cut to 2012, it makes $1 billion, and it's called The Hunger Games.
But there's no killing. Shh.
Yeah, right.
We won't show it to you.
Right.
Unless it's someone really
bloodless.
Right?
Yeah. See, Hunger Games was fine. I'm not bashing Hunger Games. But, like, I think a movie like Battle Royale, for all of its craziness, is way more sort of responsible in the way that it handles this subject. I'm not suggesting it's like a responsible movie, but just if you're going to do it, show it in all its horror.
Yes.
You know?
Because there's a purpose, like you said before, there's a purpose behind why it's showing the horrible things that it is.
I think people think it's exploitation, and it is in the sense that, like, it's a hook. It's, oh my gosh, have you heard about this movie where kids kill each other? Like, that's a hook, and that's what exploitation movies are. But I don't think... I think it's exploitation in service of something greater.
Yes. It's to say, well, don't, it's not, it's ownership of that. It's not saying like, oh, hey, look at all these other people who are doing this. It's like, no, dude, we are all doing this.
Right. We're awful, us. Awful we're thing. They're us. We're them.
Yes.
Yes. That is the best line from the remake of Night of the Living Dead. Just kidding, everyone. Thank you for listening. Remember to sign up to follow us on Twitter at F This Movie for F This Movie Fest on February 2nd.
Yeah.
And
I'm going to be there. Are you going to be there?
I'll be there. Yeah. I have to be there.
Okay.
I'm required.
Okay. I'm glad that you're going to be there.
Yeah. At the end of F This Movie Fest, we're all going to murder each other.
Whoa.
Bye, everyone.
See you later. I choose Potlid.